is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Batchelor with Professor Evan Ellis, the U.S. Army War College, and my guide to the New World Report. The general story of Latin America is of economies that seek to turn their natural resources, and it is rich with natural resources, into prosperity. And this has caused disorder between the well-to-do and the people who live on the land. However, there is another part of Latin America I read now comprehensively in a new report, and it's called Narconomics. It dominates the whole region. But in reading this report, what I learn is that the gangs are not limited to old-fashioned shoot 'em up. The word sophisticated is inadequate. These are business people. They are looking at globalization from the point of view of moving our product and making certain that the supply chain works. In this instance, it would be the supply chain of cocoa crop cocaine. But other drugs, fentanyl, for example, and opioids, are now part of the supply chain. The revelation to me, Professor, was not only what I'm talking about is as if they're toy manufacturers or electronic manufacturers, but these narconomic gangs, they're no longer adequate to call them gangs, enterprises, are sophisticated enough to worry about the price of container ships, for heaven's sakes. At the same time, when one of their members, and the story opens with a funeral, a spectacular celebration in Chile, in Santiago, of a gang member who's dead, and they're celebrating his life. These are apparently commonplace throughout the region, but in Chile, in a region that we understood was economically advanced, with a sophisticated, educated middle class, just gone through an election where there was no reason to doubt that the people voted for, the will of the people is bringing in a new President Boric. But Narconomics, is it the story behind everything, the way this article communicates? The cash is everywhere, and no one can be safe from the influence of that cash.
Well, it's a great question, John. And certainly we feel it in the United States, especially in the domain of drugs, with more than 100,000 people who died of drug overdoses last year, as well as the way that we're impacted by gang violence and other things. But just like you have very complex licit economies, you also have a lot of complexity in the illicit economies. In my case, I personally find it useful to think of three types of groups. You have the relatively large, well-connected international organizations such as the Sinaloa cartel in Mexico or the Jalisco Nueva Generación cartel or maybe the First Capital Command at the PCC in Brazil. Then you have what I call intermediary groups, groups who engage in smuggling or money laundering, who might only operate within one country or in the border region, but whose role is vital and who are collaborated with by those other groups. And then you have the gangs. You've, of course, Marisalva Trucha, Barrio 18, who might be a little bit involved in international trafficking, but they are also very involved in local control and local extortion and local crime. Now, as you alluded to, the interesting thing was that all of those groups were impacted in complex ways by COVID-19. So on the one hand, you can talk about how the groups were hurt in the same way that the rest of us were hurt. So, for example, when the clubs were shut down, when street vendors weren't earning as much money, the gangs like Marisalva Trucha were hurt because they couldn't extort as much money or they couldn't get as much money from the nightclubs. In the same type of way, when borders were shut down to regular trade, it was harder to get containers through, just like it was for the rest of us. But what you actually saw on balance was that there was a lot of adaptation by those groups. In many ways, probably on balance, even though they were all hurt, the criminal groups came out on top in the end. I mean, they were able to use creative ways around the diversion. So they used more subs and yachts and things like that. They adapted their supply chains using what we would know as nearshoring. They were able to take advantage of the fact that also human need and opportunities actually increased because of COVID-19. So, for example, there was more informality, people getting out of the formal sector because they lost their businesses. And so there's more opportunity to work with people in the informal sector to hide money. There's more poverty, which meant that there was more desperation, people more willing to collaborate with the drug gangs, more willing to launder drug money through their small businesses, et cetera, et cetera. And at the end of the day, also the government resources in the region were limited. So if you think about all the things that the governments were doing during COVID, security forces enforcing curfews and things like that, trying to stay out of the neighborhoods because the police forces didn't want to catch COVID, postponing major decisions on equipment upgrades because they needed to spend it on COVID. All of those things that the government was doing to try to fight COVID was things that they were not able to do to fight organized crime. Meanwhile, the organized crime groups were consolidating their control in the barrios. They were handing out PPE. They were handing out donations of goods. And so probably on balance, in this complex criminal economy, in many ways, the problem got a lot harder for us during COVID-19.
Ecuador. The Economist article features the efforts by the president there, Lasso, who is one of the few I can name who has not gone the way of the, well, Castillo, Boric, and Castro in Honduras, the left side of the equation. Lasso is undetermined in that fashion, but he declared a state of emergency in October because of the drug violence. I lost track of whether it has been considered successful or not. It's certainly a threat to his regime if he fails. Are there other presidents seeking to, in some way, fend off the effect, the power of narconomics, or is he by himself?
Well, John, the reality is the entire region is trying to fend off the effect of how this has been transformed. And it was interesting, and I think the case of Guillermo Lasso really illustrates just how complex the problem is. Because, for example, on the one hand, you had local gangs. There was a reference in the article, for example, to the Choneros, who was a local drug gang that actually worked with the Mexican cartels like Sinaloa and Jalisco Nueva Generación. And so in some of the infighting between the Choneros and some of the other factions actually precipitated some violence in prisons, which really was what ultimately forced it. There was a major prison massacre, which forced Lasso to act, not just because of the prisons, but because of some of the other ties. But if you look across the region, I mean, Andrés Manuel López Obrador in Mexico, his famous, hugs, not bullets approach, where he basically has tried to avoid provoking some of the narco groups too much, has neither reduced violence nor has really got the groups under control. In other places, again, like Central America, the problem has been somewhat swept under the carpet, but it's certainly gotten worse. The PCC that we alluded to before, Brazil is becoming a major international group moving across South America, not just Brazil, but in Paraguay, in Argentina, in Peru. You have increasing routes that are going to Asia out of the north of Chile. For the Chileans, the northern border has become more of a problem than ever. And so in many ways that we don't pay attention to in Washington, this problem has just become supercharged by COVID-19, and every government in the region, whether right or left, either ignoring it or dealing with it, but is impacted by it in one way or another.
The narcofunerales, if I say it correctly, that I mentioned, the celebration of the death of a gang leader or a gang lord in Santiago, The Economist says that Jose Antonio Kast, the now failed presidential candidate in Chile, made a story of these narco funerales. I'm presuming that Boric is not in favor of them. Is Boric's government in a position to combat the narconomics? He has made promises in all directions about equitable distribution of land and profits. Is that a priority for him? He is a very young man. And many of these young men dying in the gang wars are his age.
It's a good point. There's an interesting parallel because just in many ways, like former President Trump was elected because of the sense of frustration of what was happening because of immigration contributing to crime in the United States and thus the need to better control the borders. In Chile, you have a very serious problem with the northern border and some of the illicit activities in migration there coming from, especially Peru and Bolivia but elsewhere. And so in many ways, the candidacy of Kast was kind of a law and order candidacy reacting to some of those pressures. Now, the question is, will the more touchy-feely, young Gabriel Boric adopt the same type of hard line, or will he try to go for the so to speak, root causes of organized crime and difficulties in Chile? I suspect that some of the economic crises that we're going to see unleashed by the new tax policies, the new anti-mining policies, some of the new expanded government proposals that Boric may try to implement could actually make the economic needs and thus those problems worse. But we'll see how that plays out. But Chile, which actually has the highest per capita drug consumption, especially cocaine, in Latin America, and has also become a transit route for drug flows from Peru and Bolivia to Asia and other destinations, it's certainly becoming an increasing problem for Chileans who have long been accustomed to thinking of their country as a place where there is law and order and relative security.
Finally, a hint here in the Economist article about fentanyl and the more potent than heroin and its import in containers, meth and fentanyl, to the U.S. The suggestion here is that Mexican gangs increasingly produce what they use to import from Europe, sourcing raw materials from China. Is there any evidence that China is witting in participating in these gangs? Are we looking at a fentanyl producer who puts into bins what he sends to Mexico for repositioning into America? Do we know anything like that?
Well, John, I mean, the truth is, for quite some time, China has been the major source not only of fentanyl, but also precursor chemicals for synthetic drugs like methamphetamines. Things like ephedrine and pseudoephedrine have long been primarily sourced from China. Now, I can tell you that the Chinese do cooperate with the State Department and the DEA and others on some of these issues. Do they cooperate as much as we would like them to, or in the ways that they like them to? That cooperation has been incomplete, and certainly they have not gotten a grip on the problem. But as you also alluded to, because there is such a high value and these things are so small in terms of the doses, you can get enormous amounts of drugs in the country either by mail or other things. For a long time, the fentanyl and the precursor chemicals for methamphetamines would come in through Mexico, and then they would be transformed in Mexico into the United States. And as you pointed out, there was some adaptation that occurred, that when there was some temporary supply cutoffs out of Wuhan, they figured out a way to do some of the local manufacturing themselves. So it does continue to be a very intractable problem. It's a problem that is absolutely tied to the supply from China. China certainly could do more, and that's where we're at right now.
Professor Evan Ellis, U.S. Army War College, Latin American Research Professor. The two big elections in Latin America in 2022, Brazil and Colombia. When we come back, I'm John Bash.
Stay tuned for more of CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.